If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, I'm Ben Parker from The Bulwark. Welcome back to another Command Post, our second this week, because it's a busy week on The Bulwark Takes channel. I'm joined, as always, by our very own Lieutenant General Mark Hertling. General, how are you this morning?
I'm well this morning. It's going to be a great day. And you just told me about the NASCAR race in D.C. I can't wait to see it. Or not NASCAR. I'm sorry. Formula.
IndyCar, yeah.
IndyCar race. IndyCar. Yeah, that should be interesting.
It should be
great. I'm not coming for it.
No. Speaking of talking to friends, we have our breaking news story that we have to discuss because President Trump wants to meet with Kim Jong-un again. We talked about Korea on our episode earlier this week about how the president said we have such a great relationship with North Korea. He has such a great relationship with North Korea. And so we were radically downsizing, all but canceling the Ulchi Freedom Guardian exercises with South Korea the day before they started. And now President Trump says, I want to meet Kim Jong-un again. Not exactly sure why. General, what do you make of it?
Well, you would think after he would arbitrarily cancel the Ulchi Freedom's shield exercise that he would talk to the South Korean leadership versus the North Korean. But it appears like this is the same kind of mode of operations that he's had with other dictators around the world, dangerous dictators like Putin and Xi, in terms of meeting with them, getting their worldview, and then applying it to what we do. It just seems increasingly, I think the doctrinal term is scary, but I'm not sure, because the first couple of times he met with Kim Jong-un, not a whole lot came out. He promised nuclear freezes and elimination of nuclear programs. And at the same time he's meeting with KJU, he's also in Iran still, dealing with another dictator or theocratic regime that has nuclear weapons. Ben, it makes no sense to me from a national security perspective.
Yeah, I agree. The Wall Street Journal reports that Trump has privately discussed setting up an in-person discussion with Kim during the president's next trip to Asia, which could happen in November when world leaders gather at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting in Shenzhen, China. I'm sure I messed up that pronunciation. I'm sorry. I don't speak Mandarin or any kind of Chinese. The best explanation I can come up with actually harkens back to something our colleague Andrew Egger wrote in Morning Shots earlier this week or last week. I think it was last week. We said basically President Trump is just trying to redo all the things he did before. He's sort of run out of ideas and is bored and is going back to old ideas that he's done before, because let's just do that again, play the hits. And he had two meetings with Kim Jong-un in his first term, and nothing came out of it apart from love letters, is what he called them. And the president said, you know, why can't we have things like they have in North Korea, where everyone salutes and they have big military parades? So I guess he wants more of that. I guess being with Kim Jong-un makes him feel good. I don't know.
But along with the big military parades and everyone saluting, you have a society that is still starving. A GDP that's terrible, an economic system that doesn't work, and most of the money being spent primarily on weapon systems and people who salute them. And if you've ever seen the kind of dynamics, and I think most people have, that go on in both China and North Korea, but especially in North Korea, where everyone is applauding and sitting up straight, there's a sycophancy there that is dangerous to any kind of society. Because it takes away from the support and service of the people to the creation of a military state, which is not one, even though I'm a military guy and I might have an advantage in a military state, I don't want to live in one. And I don't think most Americans do.
The other problem, so there are a couple problems. One of them is in a place like North Korea, you can be a military state and you can be in uniform at a very high level and live a decent life. But if you have a falling out with a leader, you don't just get to retire. You get blown up with an anti-aircraft gun or something like that. Something horrible. Yeah. So that is the advantage of living in a democracy, is that if the military leaders fall out of favor, as Douglas MacArthur said, they just fade away, which is a little bit better. A little bit better. The other thing is, let's just be very clear about this, because I sort of regret it after our last show that we didn't get into this in more detail. North Korea is an active and ongoing threat to the United States, not just potentially what they might do invading South Korea, but their ballistic missile program is clearly aimed at the United States. They don't need the long-range ballistic missiles to hit anyone but us. Their nuclear program is explicitly designed to prevent us from accomplishing any objectives in their neck of the world, really. They also make a huge amount of their government revenue by counterfeit American currency. They are part of like international criminal organizations. They actually have a whole department of the government that is for international crime. So everything from cybercrime to drug dealing, I mean, financial crimes, you name it. They are basically a pirate state, and the United States is their biggest target. And there are people inside the government working to make sure North Koreans don't damage American national security every single day. So the fact that the president says they've been very respectful is just ignorant of what's actually going on.
Yeah, and I'd add to that, Ben, that the North Koreans have been shipping their troops, again, a military state, to other countries like Russia, and literally thousands of them have been killed as they've been put in service by the Russian military against Ukraine. So it is a for sale government. And again, I just keep going back to, these are the kinds of nations we should be holding up as completely opposite of what we would like in a global environment or a free world. And yet the president and his administration seems to be coddling many of them because they write them love letters. It is governments playing our administration. And I have two things to say. First of all, we've got to broaden that aperture of just North Korean and how many other people see what's going on. But secondly, I am really starting to feel bad for Marco Rubio, because as the Secretary of State, he is trying to put out fires everywhere. And he's got a lot of help with some of the envoys that know nothing about diplomacy and the Defense Department.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Seems to want to be in every war they can get their hand on, even though they're not winning any of them. So we have some challenges here that we can talk about today.
I really disagree with that. I do not feel sorry for Marco Rubio. I do have to add this real quick. Thank you, producer Matt. More reporting for the Wall Street Journal. The United States and South Korea will halt ongoing military drills midway through their planned run, days after President Trump professed his strong ties with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and demanded the joint exercises be scaled back. The 11-day Ulchi Freedom Shield exercise, I misstated that, thank you for fixing that, will now end Friday, 6 days earlier than originally scheduled. The abrupt curtailment had taken South Korea by surprise.
It's taken me by surprise, too.
It's taken me by surprise. I mean, this is, cuddle up to your enemies and insult and inconvenience your friends. What's the strategy here?
Again, I'm going to broaden the aperture. What is everyone else in the world thinking right now? That it's not only the question of what the heck are they doing, it's another dumping of the trust bucket. Because any exercise we conduct all over the world, and when I was in command of U.S. Army Europe, in my last year in command, we conducted 407 different exercises in 1 year. Now, some of those were large, some of them were small, but the fact is that you relate and build alliances by conducting these exercises. So South Korea they have 18,000 soldiers in this exercise. I'm not sure how many we have, but it's it's a combination of simulations, real life play, people on the ground, command post exercises that are all rolled into one in a very unique way. And these are great exercises because you not only see the troops, training in their skills, but you have the headquarters doing computer drills that are coordinated with the troop movements. These things are complex, expensive, and they help our readiness. And we are hurting ourselves. We are literally shooting ourselves, not in the foot, but in the forehead with this announcement.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, it's terrible. This gets us into our larger topic that we wanted to discuss today. We're going to go a little bit high concept because, as you said, these things all relate to each other. One piece of the world is connected to every other part of it because it's a globe. It's not a flat Earth, okay? And there should be some sort of process, but they're really just winging it. And they're doing one thing here, one thing there. You mentioned incompetent and unqualified special envoys we have doing our diplomacy around the world. We have this clip from Jared Kushner talking about his special back channel to Iran. I think he just said this yesterday. If we could play the clip.
Conversations between the U.S. government and different areas of the Iranian government at all areas is probably more robust than it's maybe ever been. And so there's been a lot of good dialogues, which I think is very, very helpful, right? And President Trump's going to be very patient. He doesn't want to rush to a deal. He'll make the right deal when the right deal is ready. But we are having very positive and active conversations.
Okay, quick fact check.
He said that Monday. He said that Monday. Since then, President Trump has tweeted, there are no negotiations going on. There are no talks or conversations. Wow, Matt, that was very fast. Thank you for getting that up. So, okay, sorry, General. I had to correct myself. No, what were you going to say?
But not, I was going to say that. But also, the foreign minister of Iran said there's no negotiations. And the IRGC has said there's no negotiations. So you've got Jared Kushner, a guy who is not a government employee. He does not allegedly have a classified...
A security clearance, yeah.
Security clearance, thank you. Talking about what's going on behind the scenes, and if we had continued with that clip, he would have said something like, I can't tell you what's going on because it's classified. Really? You got a clearance now? That's great, Jared. That's super. Because you're not a member of the government. Ben, it is on a daily basis stretching the credibility of this administration and the U.S. government around the world, which is harmful to our security.
I remember at the beginning of Trump, too, there was a bit of a simmering story about how, you know, Jared and Ivanka really aren't getting involved in this administration. They're really taking, you know, hands off. They didn't want to be like they feel like they got burned by last time. They just want to be business people. And so apparently Jared has gotten involved now in the war in Iran, in addition to some other things. And once again, I do not feel bad for him. He made this choice and tough, you know, it's bad for all of us. I feel bad for the country, but man, you asked for this. Congratulations.
Do you ever think, though, just to take a segue before we get into the main topic, do you ever think he picks up the phone and says, hey, Dad, can you chill a little bit? Can you let me try and get through this without, you know, capsizing the boat while I'm in the middle of the ocean? It's just amazing to me.
It's a great question. I would pay a lot of money to know the answer. I hope one day we find out. All right. So we wanted to, this week has been so crazy. That's why we're doing a second episode of Command Post in 1 week. We wanted to take a trip to a fantasy land where the process actually works and there are competent people in the government and they actually think about things and think through them in a systematic, ordered way. So we wanted to do a little exercise about what it might look like if things were working normally. And so we thought we'd do a mock National Security Committee deputies meeting. General, you've actually been in one of these meetings.
So in one. Describe,
in one. That's more just than one. I've been in. Yeah. You've actually been in one of these meetings. So if you could describe what these meetings are, who's in there, what the point is, and why the system exists.
Well, this is a deputies committee, or DC is in Washington speak, is a meeting where much of the hard interagency works. It's a prelim to a principals committee, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But it's where national security policy gets done and hopefully coordinated before it's presented to the principals so they can tackle the tough questions and come to a conclusion about policy. So the deputies committee consists of, oh man, the one I happened to go to was, you know, it was a Star Wars bar scene. You know, it was people from State Department, DOD, Treasury, Commerce. It had a ton of people from within the National Security Council. The deputy the National Security Advisor, the deputy advisor was in the meeting. I was there representing a contingency plan for an operation. There were people from the budget office, from the GAO. I'm trying to think back to the memory of this particular
Justice
meeting.
Department, maybe?
Justice, Homeland Security? Yeah, Justice was there. Homeland Security had not been created at that point.
They were just beginning
to come together. But Justice was there. There were several lawyers taking notes. There was one guy recording it, just a note taker extraordinaire with a machine and handwritten notes.
Wow.
These are the kind of things. And when I say people from the NSC, I think we ought to elaborate on that. If you look at that big building next to the White House called the Old Executive Office Building, it's either 3 or 4 or 5 level building. I can't remember how many stairs or how many flights there are, but that is filled with folks usually from the NSC. Now, the president can design the NSC the way he or she eventually will want it to work based on either their confidence or non-confidence in diplomatic foreign affairs and domestic affairs. The NSC mm-hmm. also works domestic affairs. So when I was there during the second Bush administration, I think there were close to 1,000 people in the NSC, I think. I'm not sure because I didn't work in the NSC. I was over in the Pentagon. But the people that work in the NSC are two types. There are those who were hired for the NSC, and then there are detailees. So the people who are on detail come from the intelligence agency, the CIA, the DIA, the Pentagon. I mean, I'll give the perfect example. Alex Vindman was a detailee from the Pentagon. He worked in the J5, which is a strategic branch of the joint staff, in a specific area of the world, Eurasia. So he had a desk within the NSC. There's all kinds of people like that, and they have senior reps. The NSC is also divided up into subsections, mm-hmm. like you have NSC Defense or NSC Intelligence that work as little staff cells, again, depending on what the president wants to do. These are the bees in the beehive. These are the ones that take critical questions that rise to the level of the president and work solutions before the president and his principals committee sit down, usually in the Oval Office or perhaps in the Situation Room, and nug out answers and what they want to do. Oh, by the way, there's always someone from the communication team there too, because they're, you know, usually a deputy White House communication advisor, because they want to know what's going on so they can prepare for those things, for the things that are about to happen. So that's the deputies committee, Ben. Do you want to talk about the principals committee?
I mean, I can a little bit. The point here is that hard questions rise to the top. And so you have the experts working at them, working out options, working out policies, seeing where there's agreement, where there's disagreement, and they queue up the big questions for the president and the cabinet secretaries to work on. So that when the president has a National Security Council meeting with the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the Attorney General, maybe Secretary of the Treasury, Commerce, whoever he's gotten there.
Chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure the Director of National Intelligence, CIA Director, all sorts of those people, they're only working on the really hard questions. And that can be, depending on the president, it could be the really hard question of the day. What do we do about this issue right now? Or as it sometimes was under Eisenhower or at times under Reagan, it can be completely independent of what's going on, right? We'll work on this hard issue that's going on right now, but let's have a meeting to talk about a long-term thing or talking about a question that, you know, otherwise we wouldn't think about. It's all designed to give the president the best information, the best options, a full view of what's going on so that he can sit down with his fully informed cabinet and say, you know, what are the issues? What are the options? And make a decision. Is that about right? Because I've never been in these meetings.
I haven't been in a principals meeting either, but I do know I do have two really good friends who were during the Obama administration. And, you know, they can't talk about what happens in there, but they can give you a feel for what it's like. And it usually is all the highest folks in government, like you said, state, DOD, the Department of Defense Secretary, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who's the military advisor. Depending on the issue, they could bring in the FBI director. But these are individuals that have real understanding of issues that are going to be brought up. And the principals committees are, you know, it's usually the National Security Advisor that sends out a note saying, hey, we're having a deputies committee on this day. And 3 days later, we're going to have a principals committee. And here are the people I want there. So it is, you know, the National Security Advisor sort of acts along with the White House Chief of Staff as the person that's really saying, be at this meeting. It's interesting. I read something the other day that said General Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, in the first 300 days that he was the chairman, had been to the White House 320 times. Whoa. So that tells you the back and forth that goes on with the principals, depending on what the issue is. So, you know, that National Security Advisor is also responsible in these principals committees.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
For developing the agenda of what is going to be talked about. Because the president doesn't have a whole lot, most presidents don't have a whole lot of time to screw around with issues. They got to get in there, get the facts, have the discussion, make the decision, and go. And I think we also ought to say, Ben, that no easy decision rises to the level of the president.
Right.
There is nothing that comes into his desk that's easy to decide. There's all, if it's a singular issue, there are 20 different solutions. And the principals committee are the ones that discuss what's the best solution based on not only the individual problem, which is right here, but how it affects the entire globe, which is out here. So you may be talking about, I think we're going to go into the Korea issue in a minute.
Yeah, let's start. If
you're talking about Korea, is there someone from the China desk there? Is there someone from the Russia desk there? Is there someone that knows NATO that says, here's how NATO is going to react to this? Is there someone even from South America that says, hey, here's how shutting down an exercise with Korea is going to affect South America? Is there someone from the military that says, hey, boss, Mr. President, we've been having this exercise now for the last 50 years, and it's really important, and it not only deters North Korea, but it's a reinforcer of our policies in Asia, and if we cancel it, we're going to look silly all over the world. You would hope there would be someone that says that gives their best professional military, intelligence, diplomatic, economic advice to the president. So that's what happens in these things.
Okay, well, we split up the role before we started this video here of National Security Advisor. We chose about four topics we wanted to go through. So we're going to do a sort of improv deputies committee meeting. And let's just start with Iran. Let's say the National Security Advisor, the deputy, says, we want to talk about what's going on in Iran. And General, you're the Deputy Secretary of Defense. So what do you say at the deputies committee about Iran?
Well, when I'm coming to that meeting as the Secretary of Defense or as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, my staff has prepared me to go into this thing with full talking points. And I'm answering questions like, what's currently happening? What's the current operational status? What are the U.S. interests that we have to be careful of? Where do I disagree? Because I know I'm going to disagree with others in this principles committee. Where do I disagree with state or commerce or any of this? What am I going to present to the president as potential options? Because I don't tell the president what to do if I am a good chairman of Joint Chiefs. I give him options and I try and influence him to take the one that is most beneficial to who I'm representing, in this case, the Department of Defense. What are the consequences of each one of those options? What kind of things will happen if we choose option A versus option B? And the perfect example we've seen in the last couple of months is, I'm sure someone said to the president, hey, if we start bombing Iran, they're likely going to close the Strait of Hormuz. And the decision maker, the president, saying, yeah, okay, that's great. I don't care. We're going to do it. And that's kind of how it works. But if you're really representing your agency, what is the approach that you're trying to do to influence your boss, the president of the United States, as well as, and this is the important point, Ben, you're not just influencing the president at the strategic level, you're trying to influence the other players,
right,
to show them in a very nice political way how dumb their idea is and how smart yours is. I mean, seriously, that's it. It's I'll use the old Truman quote that the object of diplomacy is to try and tell people to go to hell and make them look forward to the trip. That's what you do in a principles committee, I think. And then finally, you get to the final question of what are we deciding to do? And how am I taking this back to my organization? Whether it's, in my case, you've just appointed me either the Secretary of Defense or the chairman. What am I either going to tell, as a secretary, my civilian leadership in all the services and my underlings that are civilians? If I'm the chairman, what am I going to pass along to the combatant commanders? I don't order them to do it. I have no right. command authority as the chairman. I just give them a heads up. Hey, CENTCOM commander, hey, Pacific Command commander, you're about to get this order from the Secretary of Defense. Are you ready to get this? Are you going to give them? So you're, as the chairman, you're the warner of the different combat commanders. But as the secretary, as the key guy, you're delivering the message to the armed forces through the chain of command from the president. So that's kind of how it works.
You know, I realized we skipped a step here, which is we skipped the intel briefing, which I imagine is the first thing at the very beginning. You get someone from the intelligence community to come up and say, okay, we're talking about Iran. Give us the Iran briefing. And it's someone from CIA or DIA or whatever, right?
Boy, Ben, great catch, because I'll use a phrase here that we use a lot in the military, that we conduct intel-based operations. Mm-hmm. If the intelligence doesn't support it, we don't want to do it. If we don't have enough intelligence, how are we going to get it in order to do it? And we've seen failures in our national security policies when we don't have enough intelligence. I'll go back to the start of the Iraq War, where we thought we had good intelligence on Yellow Cake and their weapons of mass destruction. And in fact, we didn't get enough. And by the way, if you look at some of the issues that occurred during that principal's meeting, the CIA director did not quite want to go forward with what the president and the Secretary of Defense wanted to do. And they pulled the State Department head of state.
Colin Powell,
Secretary of State, into the thing and made him the guy between the dog and the fire hydrant. Mm-hmm. I'll use that term, okay? He was the guy that had to deliver the message to the diplomats of the world with convincing evidence, when he wasn't sure, if you read some of his bios, he wasn't sure the intelligence was good. So again, that's where the tension arises. Can you influence the other people in the primaries committee to do what you want them to do? And even if you can't, if the president gives the call, the president gives the call, and you got to salute and drive on.
Two really good books. I want to learn more about how all that went down with Colin Powell in 2002, 2003. One of them is Confronting Saddam Hussein by Melvin Loeffler, and the other one is by Joseph Stieb called The Regime Change Consensus. He goes back and goes through all the files. They both do. Talk to all the people who were there. Really interesting story of how that happened. Sheds a whole new light on the beginning of the Iraq War. Okay.
Can I add two more books to that? You know, the other two books are from people who sat on those committees. Duty by Robert Gates is a terrific book, not only about his life, but also how he acted in different roles in the government, but also William Burns's book, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, about his actions as a foreign service officer before he became the CIA director under President Biden.
Excellent. I love it when we give book recommendations. Okay. Which role should I play now? Should I be Secretary of State? Should I be Marco Rubio?
I don't want to say something like you're too smart for that, but what if you're the CIA director? What if you're Radcliffe?
Oh, so that's a hard one. So if I'm the CIA director.
It is a hard one.
So my default position is I will tell you the intelligence. I will give you our analysts best assessment based off of what our operatives have been able to gather, what information, what we've gotten from our allies, depending on exactly how this role works in which administration, maybe what we've put together with the rest of the intelligence community. And I am just here for the facts. It's like Dragon.
Now, the facts. Are we just talking about Korea now, the Korea issue?
I think we're talking about Iran.
Oh, okay. All right,
yeah.
Go ahead.
But either way, I'm going to say, you know, here's what we believe is the state of the Iranian government. Here's what we believe is the state of the Iranian military. Here's what we think is going on with their economy, with their society, with their trade. If the president asks me for a policy recommendation, that's a little more complicated, right? Because that's not really my job.
That's not your job.
But also the president is allowed to ask, and he can ask me, well, what if we have covert action possibilities? Do we have any options for covert action? Because that is a policy area that I am in charge of. So I can say, well, we could do this, we could do that. And then it's almost more like a military thing. Here are the risks, here are the trade-offs, here are the consequences. And this is where I've heard people say that sometimes in a National Security Committee meeting, the intel people say, here's the problem. It's basically there's no solution. And what does the State Department say? There's no diplomatic solution. Ask the military. The military says, there's no military solution. Ask the Treasury. The Treasury says, there's no sanctioned solution. And they all agree on covert action because that's just like the last option.
Well, I let me give you an example of this, too, because a couple of months ago at the early stages of the Iranian operation, there was a bubbling up of an option which would be presented at a principals committee to bring the Kurds in a revolutionary force within Iraq. Now, if you go into that principals committee without understanding who the Kurds are and what they do, and really having a firsthand account, and the reason I bring this one up is because having spent 15 months in northern Iraq, I got to know the Kurds and know what their influence techniques are and what their Kurdish regional government's national interest is. Mm-hmm. And it ain't overthrowing the government of Iraq or Iran. It is to build an autonomous state. So people are enamored with the Kurds because they are great fighters and they're great rebels and they're good guerrilla fighters. So if someone brings up, like, let's say, you know, like you asked the question to the CIA director, hey, could we use the Kurds in northern Iraq for covert action, or northern Iran for covert action? He might say, well, that's a possibility. Whereas someone who's served in northern Iraq would be going, oh, God, don't say that. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But that's what should happen. Not obviously in that technique,
right,
but someone else in that room should know something about the Kurds. And if they don't, Ben, here's the important point. If the CIA director says, yeah, sure, that's a possibility, and the president turns to state and says, what do you think? And if Marco Rubio knows nothing about the Kurds because he spent his whole life in Venezuela, he says, sure, they were good during the ISIS crisis. And then he turns to Air Force pilot, Chairman Joint Chiefs Dan Kane, what do you think about the Kurds? And he says, well, yeah, that sounds good to me. I was in Erbil for a while doing the ISIS mission. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, go ahead. And the president makes a decision.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Without having all the facts.
Yeah.
That's where the problems come about.
And that's why hopefully the Kurds would be on the agenda. It would be a thing that they knew they were going to talk about. And the CIA director would go to the people in the CIA and the State Department people would go to the people in the State Department who have been there, who know the area really well, who know the individuals, who know the people who have spent time there. And they would say, yeah, here's what the Kurds are really good for. Here's what we like them. Here's why that might not be a good idea. Here's what might happen. Here's what the trade-offs would be. And
now,
by the way,
if I could add one thing to the Kurdish issue. So we learned last weekend, interestingly enough, that the State Department kind of co-opted Nurshavan Barzani, which is a name strange to every American, but he happens to be the prime minister of the Kurdish regional government and a good friend of mine from my time in northern Iraq. So when I heard Nurshavan Barzani, who lives in Erbil, was educated in Iran and has worked with both governments, was the interlocutor and part of the conversations with the Iranian government and specifically the IRGC, I said to myself, smart move. That's pretty good. Good job on that
good
one.
For him. Yeah.
So that's the kind of good thing that could come out of it, but we got to be careful in terms of what the president puts on true social.
So if I'm representing the State Department in this meeting, my goal is I'm thinking about America's relationships around the world, good, bad, and indifferent. And I'm trying to examine all the sort of political economic trade-offs. So for example, if I am any Secretary of State in the modern history before Marco Rubio, I have a team of people whose job it is just to discuss, just to keep track of the global energy trade, like oil shipping around the world. Now those people all got doged, so that team doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
But at least I'd have people who know, like, hey, by the way, if you're talking about a war in Iran, here's what might happen with global energy markets. They're experts in that. But I'm also thinking, like, one thing I would really want to bring up is one of America's most important relationships, probably for the next 50 to 100 years, is going to be with India. And it's a complicated relationship. India is a democratic country, but a very flawed democracy. It's got a very independent foreign policy, but it's been moving closer to the United States as it gets more wary about China. If we are serious about confronting China, India is a major partner in that alliance. The Biden administration put a lot of work into the so-called Quad with India, Japan, and Australia, which is sort of a sort of diplomatic military group, not an alliance, just hey, we hang out.
Yeah.
And so I'd be pointing out, like, hey, I'm pretty sure India imports a lot of Iranian oil. Certainly India cares a lot about the price of oil. They import a lot of oil generally. So if oil prices go up in general, you know, here's how that's going to work. We want to prove to the Indians that they should be more comfortable with an alliance with America, which historically they have not. If we're treating other allies in the region poorly, that might not go well. You know, if our actions in Iran are precipitating Pakistan to deepen its ties with Saudi Arabia and Turkey, that might be a thing that makes India nervous because India and Pakistan have a rivalry. And I'm going to be, as you said, right, we're going to ask the people at not only state, but about at Treasury about, you know, South Korea. We're still talking about Iran, right? We're going to talk a lot about oil markets, but also about ammonia and aluminum and all those other things that get traded through. And if I'm at the Department of Commerce, I'm going to say, you know, I don't know, like we have, you know, how are we going to prevent Iran from importing drone parts, right? Because they're trying to make drones. And is there more we can do to prevent them from importing technology? This is the kind of thing that really does not appear to be going on in this administration at all. And it's why you get these, we haven't even gotten to the rest of our agenda, but it's why you have these wild swings with Jared Kushner saying, we have these great meetings. And the president saying, I want to meet Kim Jong-un, and a war starting here and there's no plan. this is why. It's because the president is just winging it and there's no process. And look, after these, I'll shut up in just a second, I promise. But after these meetings, when we've heard from all the experts, when, you know, they've raised all the tough questions and they've given the president the options, it is always not only the power, but the responsibility of the president to think things through himself, to try to think creatively himself, not to be boxed in by what other people have thought, and to make the decision, right? That is why there is a president. The president is the only one who really can balance domestic politics of the country, what the American people will support, what the government thinks is responsible, all those, what Congress will support, right? All those different things. Only the president can balance them all. The president has to make the decision. But also, that doesn't mean the president has to make the decision alone. And when you're relying on just one guy's brain, especially if it's a guy like this, those decisions are not going to be well thought through. Well, okay, end of rant.
Yeah, well, two things, Ben, and then I think we probably need to close because we're excited about this and talking too long. But what's interesting is, you know, there's something they teach you in the War College, which is not in a book anywhere. It's not one of the lesson plans, but it's that personalities matter. And when you talk about the personalities in this room and how they can influence, that's one part of the equation. But the other part of the equation is the major personality in the room that you just described, is he listening? Mm-hmm. Or is he, or does he believe he's smarter than everybody else in the room? That's when ego and hubris come into the equation. And what we found since the early Greek mythologies, that ego and hubris are the road to ruin. If you think you're the only one without listening to other people's influence and advice on some of these issues, you're going to fail. And especially if you make off-the-cuff, winging it, ad hoc decisions without getting it together and really finding out the effects of the things you do, you're not serving the American people or the American government or our national security very well.
There's a lesson I was taught in grad school, which is you can have bad process and good outcomes. And that's no excuse for having a bad process. You can have a good process and bad outcomes, and that's just bad luck.
Yeah.
It happens.
Or you can have bad processes and bad outcomes, and that means you're not doing it right.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right. Yeah, I got to go cool down, drink some water or something. This gets me so angry.
Take a knee. Take a knee, drink some water.
All right. General, hopefully next week we won't have so much crazy news to dive through, but I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about at Command Post next week. By the way, before we go, I almost forgot. If this is your second Command Post of the week, thank you so much for watching. I assume that means you like the show, get something out of it. Consider, if you're not already, becoming a Bulwark Plus member. You get to comment, and the general and I are in the comments. It's a great place. A lot more book recommendations in the comments if you're into that kind of thing. There's members-only chats. I just did one of these earlier this week with our members where we just talk about things, share ideas, share articles. It's great. There are other good perks. You get members-only newsletters, podcasts. You get early access to tickets to the live events. This is the thing I really want to highlight. Our fall tour, the Good Fight Tour, is coming to Columbia, South Carolina on October 16th, Charlotte, North Carolina on October 18th, Atlanta, Georgia on October 20th, featuring Sarah, JVL, Tim, Sam, possibly other guest appearances from some Bulwark personalities. We'll see, fingers crossed. So if you're a Bulwark Plus member, you can get those tickets right now. If you become a Bulwark Plus member, you can get your tickets right now at thebulwark.com/events. If you're not a member, tickets go on sale Friday. So you can try to get your tickets ahead of time becoming a Bulwark Plus member by going to thebulwark.com/events. If you are a YouTube Bulwark member, you have the YouTube membership, not the Substack membership, then go to our channel and click on the membership tab. And at the bottom, there's a post with the details of the pre-sale. And again, if you are not a Bulwark Plus member, tickets go on sale Friday, August 21st. Make sure you get them. These events are wonderful. We love seeing all the people. And they're really just very heartening in a time when we need some good news. It's good to be around people.
Yep.
And with that, thank you so much for joining me on another Command Post, General. Can't wait to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. It's always fun to be with you.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it.
At CAPS, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.